you get to countries like Bosnia, the opposition's even stronger. In Latin America, opposition is overwhelming. There's a good reason why the summit meeting of the coalition last Sunday had to be in a military base on an island. They had to make sure that there were no people nearby, because anywhere they go in the world where there are people nearby, they're going to be in serious trouble. That is unusual. And in fact, this achievement in the last year is remarkable. Whether you like George Bush and his friends or not, you have to give credit where it's due. It's hard to achieve a result like that. I can't think of anything like it in history. Well, how did Bush and his colleagues manage to make themselves the most feared and hated political leadership in the world, shaming their country at the same time, and also endangering the people of the country, because you can't maintain an image like that and not expect reactions to it. You'll recall, right after September 11th, when there was overwhelming sympathy and support for the United States because of the terrorist atrocities, George Bush asked plaintively, why do they hate us? It's a pretty silly question, and the answers that were given are even sillier. But there is something behind it. You could ask a sensible question and give sensible answers. However, Bush has now succeeded in making that a sensible question, and he's even added an answer. They hate us because of you and your cronies, Mr. Bush. On that, the evidence is simply overwhelming. Well, how did things come to this pass? It's something we all ought to be concerned about, no matter where you stand on the issues. Let's start with September, last September. That was a real turning point. In fact, that's really when it takes off. A number of important events took place last September. One of them was that the government released its national security strategy, major foreign policy document. The document stated, frankly and openly, that the United States intends, the U.S. government intends to rule the world by force. That's the one dimension in which the United States is completely supreme. Competitors in other dimensions, but not in force. Furthermore, it is not going to accept any challenge to that supremacy now or in the future. So any challenge will be beaten down. It announced a doctrine which is called, like if you read front page of the New York Times today, it's debate about it, it's called preemptive war, but that's incorrect. It's not preemptive war, it's preventive war, which is a totally different concept. Preemptive war means something, and there are circumstances in which preemptive war falls within the framework of international law. So Article 51 of the UN Charter, the main element of international law which permits the use of force. Preemptive war means something like this. If say there are airplanes flying over the Atlantic with the clear intention of bombing the United States, the U.S. Air Force would be permitted to preempt, not wait for the bombs to fall, but shoot the planes down and maybe even attack the bases from which they came. That's preemptive war, and it's kind of a borderline issue, but you can justify it, and it falls within the general framework of accepted international law. Preventive war is something completely different. Preventive war means we will decide who is going to be who is a potential threat to us, and we will attack and destroy them. If we may invent the threat, we may imagine it, we may even believe it, but that's a completely new concept. The goal is explicitly the use of force, I'm quoting now, to prevent any challenge to the power, position, and prestige of the United States. And the U.S. response to any such challenge, in that case, no legal issue arises. That's the position of the rulers of the country that outspends the rest of the world combined on means of violence and is now forging new and very dangerous paths over near unanimous world opposition, such things as development of lethal weaponry in space, Atlas nuclear powered, which could well bring the species to an end, which is why there's such overwhelming opposition. Well, in that case, it's not surprising that you find worldwide fear and, in fact, extending to hatred. Actually, I have to admit I've just been cheating. I wasn't quoting George Bush or Donald Rumsfeld or Dick Cheney. I was quoting Dean Acheson, a respected elder statesman, a senior advisor of the Kennedy administration, leading figure in post-World War II American liberalism. He was speaking in 1963, right after the Cuban Missile Crisis, which almost led to terminal nuclear war. And right after that, he gave an address to the American Society of International Law, in which he said what I quoted, that in the case of a U.S. response to a challenge to its power, position, and prestige, no legal issue arises. That's approximately the Bush doctrine. In fact, if you look at the actual words, even more extreme. The roots of the missile crisis, as it was known at the time, that the missile crisis was, as Arthur Schlesinger put it, the most dangerous moment in history, very dangerous. The roots of it were a campaign of international terrorism carried out by the United States, aimed at what is now called regime change, that is, overthrowing the government of Cuba. The campaign began within months after the Castro regime replaced the U.S.-backed dictator. We now have extensive internal documents, released internal documents explaining the reasoning, and the reasoning was the following. To quote, the very existence of the Castro regime is successful defiance of U.S. policies of 150 years committed to ensuring that the region is subordinate to U.S. will. Didn't matter what they did. The very existence is successful defiance. Therefore, it is legitimate to carry out international terrorism and economic warfare. And after that virtually led to destruction of the world, Dean Acheson explained to the American Society of International Law that no legal issue arises as we continue to do this. Well, that's worth thinking about. Gives you an indication of what the spectrum of planning is like. We're now at the extreme ends. Cheney, Rumsfeld, et cetera, one end, Acheson, Kennedy at the other end. But thinking is not that diverse, and I think that's something that ought to worry us too. It's really, in my opinion, these things ought to be taught in elementary school and ought to be known to everyone in college by heart. It's very important matters.